One of the first things that drew me to the Buddhist teachings was that it approaches happiness as a skill. It's not something hit or miss, not something that a god can give or take away at will, at his pleasure or her pleasure. It's something you can create. As with any skill, it requires two things, as with any dharma: commitment and then reflection. You commit yourself to doing something, and then you reflect on it. How's it going? What are the results? And if you don't like the results, you can change. If you do like the results, you can maintain the original causes. In other words, you approach happiness as an exercise in wisdom. Think of the Buddha's statement about how wisdom begins: finding a Brahman or contemplative, in other words, someone who's practiced the Dharma, and ask that person, what want to do will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? What's skillful? What's blameless? The basic answer comes in the three forms of merit. There's generosity, virtue, meditation. But it's important that you approach these things as a skill if you want to get the most out of them. This means you don't just go through the motions. We're not talking about ritual merit here. We're talking about actually taking it to heart, engaging in these things, committing to these activities, and then reflecting on them. And it's in reflection that the wisdom grows. You can take that pattern of commitment and reflection and make it more detailed in terms of the four bases for success. You're going to succeed at generosity, succeed at virtue, and succeed at meditation. It's despite what you may sometimes hear, that there is no such thing as a good or a bad meditation. There really is. Good meditation helps you to settle down. The mind is still, satisfied, nourished by the meditation. And it can be done. And the same principle applies to generosity and virtue. With the four bases of success, you've got what? You've got desire, persistence, intent, and then analysis. The analysis is the reflection. And the others are the commitment. You have to want to do this. If you're going to be generous, tell yourself, something good is going to come from this. The Buddha said this attitude is an important part of getting the most out of generosity. In order to generate that desire, you want to look for people who inspire you, or causes that inspire you, so you feel good about giving what you've given. The Buddha recommends looking for people who are free from passion, aversion, and delusion, or who are on the path trying to get rid of those qualities of the mind, because they will be most likely to make the best use of your gift. So you look at the recipient, and then you look at the gift. What are the things you want to give? What attitude do you want to have as you give? Then with persistence, you try your best. For example, with your attitude, your motivation. Some people give, the Buddha said, because they're thinking of storing what they're giving up as a, basically putting in the bank for the next life. And he says that's the lowest of the possible motivations. He doesn't say it's bad. He says that there's better. A higher motivation is based on compassion. You see that you have more than enough of something, and there are other people who don't have enough. It doesn't seem right that you would not share. Higher than that is motivation that's more inclined toward concentration. Giving makes the mind serene. Joy and gratification arise. The highest motivation is when it's purely, as the Buddha says, an ornament for the mind. In other words, you're no longer feeding off what you're going to get out of the gift. It's just a natural expression of the mind's goodness. So you try to do this well. Get your motivation in line. And then think about what you're giving, how you're going to give it. Pay attention to what you're doing. What does the recipient need? What would make that person happy? Put some thought into it. This is the part of gift giving where you can be as creative as you want. Then they use your discernment, both in the giving and in the reflecting on it. As you give, try to maintain good attitude in the mind. As the Buddha said, have the attitude that something important will come of this. There are people in his time who said that giving didn't really accomplish anything at all. Everybody was going to be annihilated to death, these people taught. So I give. It's all going to go to nothingness anyhow. That was their attitude. Well, the Buddha was saying, no. The fact that he says, there is what is given, sounds strange. But it was to counteract that other idea. We're not annihilated to death. We can help one another along. There's a path of practice that we can follow, that we can help other people follow, that will lead to true happiness. And generosity is part of that path. So as you bring the four bases for success, you succeed in your generosity. In other words, it becomes a genuine source of happiness. Same with the precepts. Don't regard them as a chore or as onerous rules that are enforced on you. Here's your opportunity to live in the world in a harmless way. Then you try to be meticulous in it. For example, with the precept against lying, there's so many little white lies that people tell in the course of the day. That's become taken for granted. This is what people do. You look at the internet, it's all lies, lies, lies. Not 100%, but there's so much of it, and it's so common. And for some reason, this, as the Buddha pointed out, this is the most important of the precepts, but for some reason it's one that people tend to resist the most. They keep coming up with excuses. They try to argue from the Nazis that there are times when you have to lie. This is where you bring in your intentness and your ingenuity. As you try to do this well, there are difficult situations where you have information you don't want to divulge. So what are you going to say? That's not misrepresenting the truth, but also does not divulge the information. It can be done. And it's a good exercise of your wisdom and discernment. That way, virtue becomes a challenge, and you're up for the challenge. Guess that's going to be a good habit to develop for your meditation. You start with the desire to do this. You want to get the mind to settle down. That desire is not to be looked down on. We're not practicing what they call choiceless awareness. We're choosing. We're choosing to get the mind to focus on one thing. And it's okay to want the path to happen. It's part of right effort, generating the desire to get rid of unskillful things and to develop skillful ones. So desire is a legitimate part of the practice. Of course, you want to focus the desire on the causes. If you just think about how much you want the results but don't do the causes, that's when the desire gets in the way. But if you focus on the causes, that becomes your persistence as you notice any distractions or any tendency where the mind is about to get distracted. You can learn how to head it off at the pass. You can also focus your desire on the breath. The breath energy is an important part of your experience of the body. Your health depends on it. General moods of the mind are going to be affected by the state of the breath energy in the body. So here's something to explore, and this is your opportunity to explore it. What kind of breathing would feel really satisfying? Which parts of the body seem to be starved of breath energy? What can you give to them? And how do you relate to the breath? How do you picture it in your mind? What way of picturing it helps you get a sense that the whole body is breathing? Every little cell is breathing. And they're all in harmony. They're all working together. And if by the way you perceive the breath, you can change the way you actually experience the breath. And it does become simply more satisfying. It does become nourishing. Of the various parts of the path, this is the one that the Buddha identifies as the food for the mind, food for the path. So if you're not feeling nourished by your concentration, okay, something's wrong. So you give full attention to what you're doing in terms of the way you breathe, the way you talk to yourself about the breath, the images you hold in mind of the breath, the feelings that develop in the body as a result, and then what you do with those feelings. Pay full attention to this, and then you reflect. You use your discernment. How do you get the most out of this? How do you understand what's going on in terms of these different kinds of fabrication? So the mind can settle down, so it can be clear to itself. So in all these activities, generosity, virtue, meditation, it is possible to succeed. It is possible to bring about genuine happiness as a skill. So look at your practice, and if it doesn't seem nourishing, ask yourself, well, which of these bases of success is missing? Where is your desire focused? Are you really putting in the effort to do this well? Are you paying full attention to what you're doing? Are you reflecting on it in a wise way? In a way that can take the results of the reflection and then adjust what you're doing so you can get better and better results. That's how any skill is developed. And here we're focusing this approach on genuine happiness. You'd think that more people would be interested in following this path. But it's as if people don't take their happiness seriously. There was that book that came out years back called Cosmic Consciousness, where the author was talking about how a sense of unity, a sense of oneness, and a sense of rightness of the world was something that was common to all religions. He talked about how people would spontaneously gain these insights, gain the sense of this consciousness. The part that he didn't like, though, was in Buddhism, where people actually cultivated it, he thought. He said it didn't seem natural. It was more natural when it was spontaneous. Of course, that had to do with his ideas about who was behind all these feelings of consciousness, unity, that it was a gift. And it didn't seem right that people were actually learning how to master this. And the problem with that, though, is, as you can see from the book, his interpretation of what the Buddhist monks were doing was pretty far from the mark. And if you just sit around and wait for these things to happen on their own, you don't have anything to compare. But if you commit yourself to doing the meditation and you reflect, you get to know your mind in its many ins and outs and ups and downs. And then in comparing, in reflecting, you get more discerning in what really is a worthwhile goal. Because we're here not for a state of oneness. Oneness, as the Buddha pointed out, is something that's fabricated, it's put together. And as you get more sensitive to the process of fabrication, you can see that. And you want to develop your sensitivity so that you're looking for something better, something unfabricated. In other words, you get more and more particular about what you regard as satisfactory happiness. That's part of developing these set of skills as well. So think of happiness as a skill. As the Buddha said, the acts of merit, generosity, virtue, meditation, are in and of themselves happiness. And they lead to more happiness. They're good in the doing and good in the results that they yield. What more would you want?